So self-ignorance is natural, uncreated, and this self-ignorance alone results in erroneous self-perception. Erroneous self-perception results in superimposition of limitations of the non-self upon the self. Superimposition results in entertainment of erroneous notions about the self. And it is these erroneous notions everyone entertains about one's own self, in terms of I am small, I am inadequate, I am unhappy, etc. It is these notions alone give rise to the common human fundamental desire of wanting to live long, happily. And is one fundamental, common human fundamental desire alone gives rise to varieties of various diseases of various human beings. When the diseases come, so we have to understand we are not creating, producing our diseases. We do not have any say over our diseases, our thoughts. Diseases come naturally. And once a desire comes, desire makes you scheme in the mind how to fulfill the desire. So you implement the form of action. You perform an action. You speak orally or do something physically. Think first. Think. Plan out your, start scheming how to fulfill my desire. Then speak also, then do, then you fulfill your desire. Once you fulfill your desire, a new desire comes. You fulfill another desire, a new desire comes. A fulfill one desire, another new desire comes. And desires are very natural, numerous. No desire, the fulfillment of no desire will be the end of the desire. And if the desire does not get fulfilled also, it will result in anger. Anger is nothing but modified form of unfulfilled desire. When you are impelled by a disease, either you act in anger, you also react. And when there is anger, is very pleasant or what? Nobody wants to be angry, because in anger, anger is not a really pleasant state of mind. Not desirable for anyone. But still there is anger. So once, where there is desire and desire, definitely there will be anger. Just you cannot give up your desire. Similarly, you cannot, you are not creating your anger. Where there is desire, there will be definitely anger also. There will be attachment also. What is attachment? It is desire for something. You make efforts to fulfill the desire, and a new desire will come. Or if the desire does not get fulfilled, then you also feel frustrated, and there will be anger. Where there is anger, definitely there will be hatred, there will be jealousy, very natural traits. There will be greed, very natural. There will be pride, there will be delusion. They are all very natural. So where these six are there, we say kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. Desire, anger, greed, delusion, pride, jealousy, envy. Where these six are definitely there. One desire is, they'll all be there. Not in everyone's mind it is there, in dormant, in latent condition. Nobody knows that. Nobody can say, I don't have all of them, until they surface. There are situations, circumstances, and which will trigger them, then they will surface. So in everyone's mind, they're all dormant and latent underneath in subconscious. And where these six are, what happens naturally? These six are there, where there is sense of inadequacy, sense of smallness, centered on I. Only when this fundamental problem of sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy, centered on I is resolved, all these six will resolve for good. You cannot undo them. You need not drop them. They will disappear just as the snake resolves the rope. Similarly, they will all resolve. They will just resolve. When this sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy, centered on I is resolved. When they are there, and having them all, that is what actually, there is grief, sorrow, sadness, different degrees of pain. There's unhappiness. Therefore, what is the root cause of unhappiness? It is the ignorance. Keeping the ignorance safe underneath, whatever efforts we make, how many of our desires you fulfill, how much your work you work hard, how much you accomplish, how many degrees you get, how much your money and wealth you accumulate, however popular you become, whatever you accomplish in this world, remaining self-ignorant, you know, it will not before the accomplishment. As a non-accomplisher, you had sense of smallness and inadequacies centered on I. Now, as an accomplished person also, you continue to have the problem of sense of smallness and inadequacy centered on I. Therefore, naturally, as an accomplished person also, the so-called relatively accomplished, successful person also in the society, still one will have all these, you know, unfulfilled desires, anger, hatred, jealousy. Very natural. But in a proportion way, may vary from person to person. It will all be there. Hurt will be there. Guilt will be there. You can't escape becoming the victim of hurt and guilt. There'll be hurt, there'll be guilt. And you will also think the world is responsible for unhappiness. Really speaking, nobody in the world, no situation in the world, no people in the world is not responsible for your unhappiness. Nor is the world a source of happiness. The world cannot make you unhappy. The world does not make you unhappy. The world cannot, does not make you happy also. You are happiness. If, unless and until you discover this fact, there'll be unhappiness. If you discover this fact, there is, you see yourself reveling in happiness. Understand? Therefore, we also, not only your perception of yourself is wrong, your perception of the world also is wrong. You think, how do you see the world? The world is a source of reality. The world will make me happy. Or either you say, somebody is very nice to you, you say, "Very, this person is very good, makes me happy." And somebody, you think the other person is responsible for your unhappiness. In fact, nobody in the world is responsible for your unhappiness. Nobody responds for your happiness also. Once you know the fact, you will not be dependent on the world for your happiness. You will not blame the world for your unhappiness. Okay? So when you, so in the wake of the understanding of the fact that it is the ignorance of what I am, it is the ignorance of not knowing what happiness is, the cause of my, root cause of my unhappiness. The world is not the source of happiness. The world cannot make me happy. Nothing in the world can really make me as happy as I want to be. Nothing in the world can make me unhappy also. Therefore, knowing this fact, if you are not dependent on the world or situations or people or anything for your happiness, if you are not blaming the world as responsible for your unhappiness, then you can call yourself a detached person. You know, attachment means being dependent on something for your happiness is attachment to that something. So enjoying something is not wrong. Being dependent, this alone will make me happy. Without this, I'll be unhappy. Think, so being dependent on the world for happiness is attachment. Enjoying the world without being dependent on the world for happiness is not attachment. Understand? Because you don't see the right thing in the wrong place. Therefore, the root cause of human misery is what? Self-ignorance. Now comes the question. We understand very well. How to resolve the self-ignorance? How to know what I am? If I was able to know myself, what I am already, then I would have already known myself. The very fact I do not even know that I do not know what I am, which means there's no way of discovering what I am myself. And here we need to understand one fact. How do you know the world, external world? We all have the knowledge of the external world of objects. There is light, there are sounds, there is smell, there is taste, there is touch. How do you know? The world is known in five different forms as five different objects only through five different senses. We do not have a sixth sense organ, isn't it? We only five sense organs. Through these five senses, you know the whole universe only in five different forms, as five different objects: form, color, light, shapes, you know through your eyes. Sounds, you know through your hearing power, ears. Smell, you know through your nose. Taste, bitter, sweetness, sour, salty, how do you know? Through your tongue. Through your skin, you know whether it's warm, cold, pleasant, unpleasant. How is it? Hot, through your skin. Which means, however vast this universe is, still this universe is available for understanding only as five different objects in five different forms through five different senses. Isn't it true? So, to have the knowledge that there is light here in this room, you need a means of knowledge. How do you know that there is light? Through your eyes. Your eyes, your seeing power alone serve as means of knowledge of the object called light. Without the seeing power, you cannot have the knowledge of the light. It's only through your hearing power you have to have the knowledge of the sound. There are some people speaking. No, there's a cat making noise. The dogs are barking. Some human beings are laughing. You hear the sound. How do you have the knowledge of the sound? You don't even see the people, but still you make out, you have the knowledge of the human beings laughing because you hear the sound, isn't it? So to have the knowledge of the sound, you have to use only your ears. To have the knowledge of the light or form or color, you have to use only your eyes. To have the knowledge of smell, flavor, you can't use your hearing power. You have to use your power of smelling, the nose. To have the knowledge of taste, how much ever you stare and stare and stare into the cup, coffee cup, you can see the color of this coffee. You can smell the color of smell the flavor of the coffee, but to know the taste, whether it has sugar or not, sweet or bitter, you have to use only your tongue. Isn't it? Which what I'm about to say here is, to have the knowledge of the sweetness, taste, you have to use only your tongue as a means of knowledge, not any other sense organ. To have the knowledge of the object called light or form or color, you have to use only your seeing power as the means of knowledge. So without a valid means of knowledge, no knowledge of any object is possible. So every knowledge of any object is dependent on appropriate, valid, corresponding means of knowledge. Isn't it true? True or not? So there's no knowledge is possible without a means of knowledge. And here comes the question. Even to have the knowledge of world in the form of five different objects, in five different forms, I am dependent on the senses as means of knowledge. And here, what is the means of knowledge? To know the truth. If you want to know anything other than yourself, You can use your sense organs as means of knowledge. The color form is different from you. You are the knower. They're all different from you. To know anything other than you, different from you, you can use your eyes as means of knowledge. The sounds are different. You are the knower of sounds. Sounds are different from you. The sounds which are heard are different from you. Therefore, you can use your hearing power as a means of knowledge to have the knowledge of sounds. The smell, the flavor or smell, the fragrance is different from you. You are the knower of smells and flavors and fragrances. Therefore, to know which is any different, which is something different from you, you can use your sense organs as means of knowledge. But here, the truth happens to be the very truth of the whole, happens to be the truth of yourself. What has to be known is yourself. You are the knower. And you are the one who has to be known. If the object of knowledge is different from you, the knower, the subject of knowledge, then you can use your senses as means of knowledge. But here, what is to be known, isn't it? What is to be known is you yourself. You are the knower and you are the one who has to be known. You are the subject of knowledge and you are the object of knowledge. When the subject itself becomes the object of knowledge, which means what? When you have to know what you are, what is to be known by you happens to be not an object away from you, different from you. You cannot use the senses as means of knowledge. You need a different means of knowledge. Understand? You need a different means of knowledge. And what is that means of knowledge? Making use of which I can arrive at what I am. Thereby I can arrive at the truth of the whole. And here we say, the Shastram, the scripture. Before I go to the topic, what is the scripture? I'll tell you one thing. You have your eyes, and using your eyes, wherever you go, you can enjoy the light, you can enjoy the forms, you can enjoy the colors, you can enjoy the shapes, you can see all that happening through your eyes. The eyes can see the whole world. And somebody comes and tells you, why are your eyes look red? Do not know how your eyes look. Your eyes can look at everything, see everything, but for eyes cannot look at themselves. Eyes can look at how, see themselves, if there is a reflecting mirror. Eyes, the two eyes, which have distortion-free vision, bright seeing power, they can see everything in the world, but when they have to see themselves, they are dependent on the reflecting medium, the mirror. Isn't it true? And even when the eyes, when you fix the mirror in front of you and you see, the eyes see, and even then, eyes alone have to see themselves. Mirror cannot make the eyes see. Eyes alone have to see themselves. see their reflection in the mirror. How can eyes see themselves? Eyes can never see the original eyes. Eyes can only see their reflection. Eyes alone can see. Eyes can see their own reflection. But they depend on the mirror. Oh, this is how eyes look. Similarly, when you want to know who you are, how the truth of the whole world is as yourself, you need a mirror which will reflect your nature. This is how you are, come on. Which you don't see through your physical eyes, but you see through the eye of mind, cognitive eye. What is that mirror? What is that mirror which serves as a means of knowledge? Understand? Shastram, scripture. The words of scripture called Veda Anta Shastram, Vedanta Shastram. The end portion of the Veda, when they are handled carefully, taught properly, unfolded carefully by a competent teacher who knows the method of unfoldment, then the words of the scripture also reflect your nature. You understand. You can understand what you are. This is how I am. This is how the truth is. This is what the fullness is. This is what happiness is. This alone is. You'll understand. Here some of you might have a doubt. Oh, how do you say the Vedanta Shastram consisting of Upanishads? Now there are many Upanishads which form the constitute the end portion of the Veda called Veda Anta Shastram. Otherwise called Jnana Kandaha of the Veda. How do you say it serves as a means of knowledge? How to trust this? How to believe this? You have to have trust to make use of it. Only when you make use of it, you will know whether it serves as a means of knowledge, it works or it does not work. Even if you go to your doctor, eye specialist, for some cataract removal, after the surgery, in the latest phaco surgery or lens, what is that now, latest? Latest technology now it has come. After the removal of cataract and you're asked to stay in the bed for a few hours, keeping your eyes closed, and your doctor enters, you ask your doctor, keeping your eyes closed, you're waiting for the rest time. Doctor, can I see now? Do my eyes see now? The doctor will say, you have to open your eyes and make use of them. You have to use the eyes to know whether your eyes see or do not see. Keeping your eyes closed after the cataract surgery removal, if you say, no, the surgery is useless, my eyes still don't see, you cannot say. without using your eyes, yeah, yeah, doctor, I can see very well. That also you cannot say. You have to open your eyes, make use of your eyes, then only you can say whether your eyes see or not. Isn't it true? Without making use of your eyes, how can you say your eyes see or eyes do not see? If keeping your eyes closed, without making use of your eyes, if you say your eyes see, then also you are wrong. If you say eyes do not see, then also you are wrong. Therefore, you cannot say without making use of the scripture in terms of studying the scripture, oh, it's all humbug, Shastram does not work. You cannot say, disprove it. Nor can you prove, say, yes, definitely Shastram works as a means of knowledge. When can you say, start making use of it, have trust, make use of it, see whether it works or not. When you go to the doctor, you have trust in what he says, you gulp the medicine. You don't ask whether it works or not. If it doesn't work, then you can go and ask him later on. You gave me the medicine, it was useless, it didn't work. Without having taken the prescription, you cannot say it works or does not work. Similarly, here also, without studying the scripture, you cannot say it doesn't work, it is useless or useful. So here definitely, the Vedanta Shastram serves as a means of knowledge. And next question comes, oh my God, it's all in Sanskrit language, how to study, all that. You are not asked to study by yourself. You need not order for all the books available in all the shops in India or everywhere, buy the books and read. No. You are supposed to study the scripture only with the help of a competent teacher who knows the method of unfoldment. And study must be from the beginning, scratch, it has to start. And the study has to continue systematically, step by step, regularly, consistently, and for a length of time. And studying this scripture for a length of time, systematically, regularly, is called Shravanam, listening to the unfoldment of the teaching. And that will tell you how the Shastram works in you. Okay? And next question comes, even if the teacher is there, even if the scriptures, the scripture is available as a means of knowledge, there is a teacher who is available also. I also study the scripture. People come and tell me, we are not new. We are exposed to this teaching for quite some time, 50 years, 30 years, 40 years. And people come and complain also. No experience, nothing happens. It's all simple, it's all mere intellectual exercise. Shastra study is only intellectual exercise. Is of no use because we don't get anything in experience, nothing have we experienced. People come and complain, which means if you are given to the study of the scripture under the guidance of a competent, now the teacher who knows the method of unfoldment, who would have been a disciple of another teacher, who would have been a disciple of another teacher. Definitely the teaching will help you see slowly. Help you resolve your thinnest layers of vagueness slowly, one by one, not overnight. even if there is knowledge also, still sometimes the knowledge will not rise. The teacher may be available, the scripture may be available, isn't it? You are also ready for, you are also inclined for studying, you also know the value of knowledge. You are not a dud anymore. You have, now you know, you are definite about the purpose of living this life. There's definiteness about your ultimate end being, the knowledge, accomplishment of, attainment of knowledge. So knowing the value of knowledge, now you also become committed to the pursuit of knowledge. You are not, you are a very serious person. You are jovial, but still you are serious. Because you are committed to the pursuit of knowledge. Then also, the Shastram says, it is very important for one to see whether one is qualified for this knowledge. Any knowledge requires qualification. One must be eligible. The eligibility, the qualification is required for pursuing any knowledge. Finish your school education, enter into the university. Finish your graduation, apply for post-graduation. Finish your post-graduation, then go for PhD. Finish your PhD, only then you can go for post-doctoral fellowship. Straight away, without having gone into the school, you can't go and apply for your degree unless you're a prodigy, isn't it? It's not practical. Always you must be qualified for any knowledge. You must know what is being said here. Similarly, this self-knowledge also, even to discover what you are, discovering what you are is the most abstract knowledge. It is the absolute knowledge, because it is knowledge of the absolute reality. It is the culmination of the search on the part of the human mind. The human mind itself will resolve in the vision of this knowledge. The search, I want to know more, know more, know more. That thirst for knowledge on the part of any mind also has to culminate only in discovering the truth of the very one's own self. There's no greater knowledge than this knowledge. It is this knowledge which is a complete knowledge. Because how much ever you know in any other field, there'll always be something more to be known. Any field, people say, however much a person is, informed in the field of physics or chemistry or biology, whichever field, always this person knows so much, it's only relative. There's so much to be known again. But it is only this knowledge, in knowing what you are, in knowledge of the truth, always complete knowledge. Once you know the truth, you know the truth completely. It's a purna jnanam. It's a total knowledge. It's not incomplete knowledge. Knowledge of anything other than yourself will ever be an incomplete knowledge. Whereas knowledge of yourself happens to be the knowledge of the very truth of the essential nature of everything here. It is a complete knowledge. Therefore, this knowledge also requires what? Prerequisite qualification. As the person knowing the value of knowledge, being committed to the pursuit of knowledge, one must become really eager to know what is that qualification one needs to have to attain this knowledge. There again, simple qualification, difficult to accomplish, what is it? Mental purity, mental steadiness. antahkarana shuddhihi, antahkarana naischalyam. Chitta shuddhihi, chitta naischalyam means mental purity and mental steadiness. And this is what I said last class. How to now forget about the knowledge also. How to become qualified for this knowledge. How to become eligible for this knowledge. Any shortcut method? Can I give some gifts to some professor and get this? No shortcut method here. You have to earn this qualification only by living a conscious, alert life. Means only by living a life of karma yoga, living a life of values, living a prayerful, worshipful life of values. How should I live my life? See, mental purity and mental steadiness can effortlessly earned in due course of time. One can become qualified effortlessly in due course of time, not overnight, by following a way of life which is called a way of life which is suitable, applicable for people of all times, always, everywhere. It's a Vedic way of life. Sanatanaha dharmaha, the eternal way of life. Once you know the purpose of living this life, once you're very clear about your goal being choiceless moksha in the form of the knowledge of the truth, which is actually the knowledge of one's own self, then when you want to live your life to be eligible for that knowledge, to accomplish that knowledge, the whole way of life becomes a purposeful life. But such a life, which is the way of life followed, knowing the purpose of life, it's a purposeful life, is in fact, the whole life becomes a life of worship. It's a prayerful life. It's an ethical life. It's a religious life. In fact, the spiritual life. You need not give up anything, go anywhere, renounce anything, wear these colors. Just be where you are. Do what you need to do. Know your duties. Know your responsibilities. See how much we are consuming. I'm eating my food. I'm wearing my clothes. I'm enjoying the shelter. I'm enjoying everything free from the air, oxygen. I'm enjoying everything from the nature. What is their contribution on my part? What am I contributing in return to the Bhagavan in the form of the natural phenomena? If we think, I tell you, even if we get benefits from the government, still we will go and try to do at least something somewhere so that we are not burdened on this earth. Understand? If we are young, I'm not talking about people who cannot do anything. Therefore, knowing one's duties and responsibilities, you know, one has doing one's duties. In doing one's duty means every human being has one's own duties. Everyone has to play different roles also. Once you come back home, your wife, for your husband, wife's role, for children, mother's role, and for elders at home, you're a daughter, or for in-laws, you're a daughter-in-law, for your friend, you're a friend, for a neighbor, you're a neighbor. Society as a responsible citizen. So you have, every individual has to play different roles. In playing every role, you have your duties. In playing all your duties, you see that all your actions you perform are in conformity with universal values. Then you are an ethical person. You may have your own personal whims and fancies. You may have your own personal likes and dislikes. But you are very conscious. You see that your actions are not dictated by your personal whims and fancies, your personal likes and dislikes. Your actions are governed by your knowledge of right and wrong. Which means you do it if it is right, whether you like it or not. You do not do it if it is wrong, whether you like it or not. Which means your actions are not governed by your personal likes and dislikes. Your actions are governed by your knowledge of what is right and wrong. Then you are an ethical person. And you are not a, you are not a gross person. As a person having known the goal of life, you can't afford to be a gross person. You become a very sensitive person, which means you appreciate how much you are blessed with. When you open the tap, you get water. You are not starving, suffering. When you are hungry, you have food at home. So when you have clothing, you have winter clothing separately, summer what to wear in summer, what to wear in winter. You have comfortable place to stay. And you imagine, you don't go and work in the fields. You cannot go and eat this grass. You cannot go and eat this, even people who eat meat also, for you to eat the meat also, chicken also, they must be eating food. They must have the food. They need grass. They need things. You can't go and eat this sand and soil and mud and stones, paper. You need food. And food means, can with your euros and pounds and dollars, can you produce food? One grain, one leaf, one bit of small meat, can you produce yourself? I tell you, foodies, vegetarian. In fact, the Mother Earth, the plants have to grow. Mother Earth has to yield plants. For the plants to grow and become food for you, there must be sun for the photosynthesis. There must be carbon dioxide available. There must be evaporation of water. There must be condensation. There must be rains. There must be water available. There must be crops growing. So, can you produce one grain? So we get all your tons and tons and varieties of bread and all the food you get, this tinned food available here, you're enjoying because somewhere people are working very hard and they're converted and modified and clean. The preserved and sent packed food is available. Go throw the money and get and keep. We think about it. Which means, I tell you, we are, once you think about it, somewhere, the whole world, imagine there's no rain for some time, finished, no food. Floods, no food. Earthquake, no food. I tell you, all these natural phenomena in the form of sun, moon, stars, water, all the natural phenomena, every phenomenon in Vedanta Shastram is looked upon as the manifestation of the reality. We look upon as Devata. Everything is looked upon as a deity. So all these phenomena, together we say, Ishwara the Lord. All the natural phenomena contribute abundantly for your well-being. Where do you get your clothes from? You are not producing. You only stitch clothes and wear. Your raw material is from the nature. How do you build your house? Where is, what about your shelter? You take raw material from the, again, the nature. The woods give you all the wood you have. The trees give you all the wood. The wood you are using to build your houses. The food you are eating, the shelter you are living, enjoying, the clothing you are wearing. I tell you, all your basic needs, for that you cannot produce anything yourself. However brilliant you are, you have to discover, the technology will be useless if you do not discover what is. So discovering what is science, and making use of what is what? Technology. So technology can help you enjoy what is only if what is available, isn't it? Therefore, you are not creating anything. Everything you are taking from the nature alone. Therefore, once you understand this fact, how humble will be. We are at the mercy of the contribution of these devatas, Lord, in the form of all these natural phenomena. So they contribute abundantly for our well-being. That is why when you acknowledge their contribution, you will feel, that is when the humility comes, you will feel humble. You will feel, you know, very grateful to all those devatas. So, then when you express your gratitude to those Lord in the form of all the phenomena, there is no Lord other than the whole. When you express your gratitude to Bhagavan in the form of all the phenomena, through a symbolic act of offering, lighting a small candle, offering one flower, do you think you can please Lord just by giving one flower? Does Lord expect it from you? No. Offering one small rose at the feet of the altar, or lighting a candle, or lighting a lamp, and bowing to the Lord in some, you keep some altar which represents, symbolizes the Lord, the whole, incomprehensibly vast whole. It is only it's a symbolic act of offering through which you express your gratitude to the Lord in the form of all the natural phenomena for their abundance of contribution. As an acknowledgement, you acknowledge their contribution for your well-being, which is worship. Understand? Worship is actually expressing one's thankfulness to Bhagavan for all that one is blessed with. Therefore, you live your life in conformity with the values, means you are living your life in harmony with the universal law, natural law and order, the Lord. The more you live in harmony with the universal law and order, the more you tap the grace of the Lord. And you're also worshipful in your life, because you are thoughtful, alert, sensitive person. You see how you're enjoying everything. Above all, you also pray. When you understand your helplessness, that you know you have to live a life of values, you are not able to live a life of values, then you seek the grace of the Lord to be able to live a life of values, then you are prayerful. This worshipfulness and prayerfulness makes you a religious person. Life of values makes you an ethical person. Your worshipfulness and prayerfulness makes you a religious person. Because you are a spiritual person, and because you have an end. Once you know the end being moksha, you're committed to the pursuit of knowledge, and you live your life in order to prepare your mind for that knowledge, then you are a spiritual person. And with that The clarity, when you live your life, and all your actions become, what are you living this life for? What are you doing these actions for? What are you earning your money for? What are you having your family for? What are you doing your duties for? Ultimately, what are you living this life for? Moksha means, then all the action, being focused on your goal, when you live your life, all the actions you do become offered to the Lord in the form of the whole, the cosmos, the Lord in the form of the phenomena, the Lord in the form of the universal natural law and order, which is called offering one's actions to the Lord. You can't offer your actions to the Lord. Understand, your actions become offered. You are very clear about your end. Then, not only that, and whatever comes in your life also, there's an attitude in your buddhi. Whatever happens in my life, you know, the failure comes, success comes, pleasure comes, pain comes, gain comes, loss comes, victory comes, defeat comes, honor comes, dishonor comes, doesn't matter what comes. Let whatever comes in life, life will be life of pairs of opposites. No life will be only life of desirable ends. Every life, there will be pairs of opposites. There will be pain, pleasure, honor, dishonor, victory, defeat, loss and gain. So life will be, but when these pairs of opposites come in life, how you see them? No, they all come and go. All these pairs of opposites come and go. Nothing is permanent in this life. They all come and go. This is what understanding the nature of situations. Pleasure also is impermanent. Definitely it will come and go. It will not be there forever. Pain also is impermanent, comes and goes. Every situation comes and goes, impermanent. Therefore, understand, they come and go. And they're all determined by the Lord in the form of law and order. Once you understand that, there is an attitude of accepting them as the gift from the Lord. The attitude also helps you. Okay? And with this attitude, when a person lives a life of values prayerfully, worshipfully, that life is a life lived with alertness and sensitivity. Okay, there such a life is what no Vedic way of life, which in due course of time will contribute for the preparedness of mind. Om, so I really pray to Bhagavan to bless all of you, Eva, France, and all of you who are here. Pray to Bhagavan to bless all of you with the longest, healthiest, happiest, most prosperous, most successful, meaningful, complete life. May Bhagavan bless all of you with the fulfillment of all your righteous wishes, not non-righteous wishes. Bhagavan bless you with the fulfillment of all righteous wishes. So wish you all the best. Om. Om Namo Bhagavate Dakshinamurtaye Mahyam Sriyam Medham Prajnancha Prayachaswaha. This mantra also Eva will teach all of you, okay? Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat. Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.